Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader. This is the first episode of season 3. Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, I have a special guest joining me. He is Dan Giroux, and he is the former AVP of Advancement, Comms, and Stewardship at Drexel University and current principal at DJG Marketing. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Thrilled to be here and dive into a conversation that is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, so Dan is a specialist, a very accomplished marketer when it comes to advancement and stewardships in higher education. So really thrilled about that episode we're going to have today. It's going to be on evolving advancement and MarCom from being a reactive service provider to a proactive strategic partner. So Dan, let's dive right into this episode right here. When we talk about traditionally reactive service provider to proactive strategic partner, give us your take on that and what that means.
I'll say, having worked both as a consultant at agencies prior to going to Drexel and then spending the past nearly 8 years at Drexel and coming out on the other side again as a consultant, kind of have that 360 view of teams, working with teams, working inside teams, alongside teams. And I think 2025 is going to be a critical year for advancement organizations. The focus the past couple of years has, of course, really been on enrollment and the critical revenue that drives in the way of bringing in students. But equally, advancement is a revenue-generating operation for a university, and you need that part of the enterprise to be high-performing and optimized just as much. So I think advancement teams tend not to get as much of the attention that central marketing communication groups or more enrollment marketing-focused teams get, but equally important. And I think back to your question of, there's a spectrum. I don't know that they're mutually exclusive. Oh, you have a service provider model, or you're the strategic partner model. It's an evolution, and for a few years you might be on one end of that, and a few years later you could possibly slide to the other. So my experience at Drexel has been how to take sort of a newly created and centralized marketing communication team within advancement to support all of advancement and elevate that up to being more of a strategic partner, where you're not just reacting to the requests of the day or the week, but actually proactive planning alongside the different teams within advancement as well as across the institution to drive strategy and to drive outcomes.
I've heard the term moving away from being a short order cook to the institution to becoming, like you said, a strategic partner to help the robust environment of the institution. Now, you mentioned that it's going to be more important in 2025 than probably before. Are you referring to the demographic enrollment cliff and the drop in traditional age students? Why advancement is going to be more important now?
Yeah, and I don't know that it's, maybe it's looming for some institutions, for others they're certainly in the middle of it. I just read yesterday that fall enrollment across higher ed in the United States was down 5%. There's, of course, some reasons for that. I think the FAFSA debacle is linked to that, but it's happening. There's change happening across the sector. Some institutions are doing better than others. Ones that are vulnerable are those, of course, who are heavily tuition dependent in terms of their revenue. And one way to offset the continued operating expenses and scholarships and being a competitive institution is to ensure that you are advancement and fundraising house is in order? Are you engaging your constituents? How are you doing that? What outcomes are leading to alignment and support of the institutional priorities? So I think, yeah, 2023, 2024, you know, during basically since COVID, it's kind of in the era of enrollment, and that will continue for sure. But I think advancement is going to start to enter the spotlight more in a way for institutions than they have in the past. And there's some that have already embraced the role and opportunity that advancement, a great advancement operation can, what that can mean for an institution. So there are partners out there, other institutions that are doing that work really, really well. But I think it's going to become more of a focus for the sector in general.
Now, looking back at your prior experience, I know that you worked at Drexel, you worked in-house at our university, but you also worked for a consultant prior to that, and you worked with hired institutions. Now, what kind of differences or key differences have you observed between Marcom teams that operate as service providers versus those that function as strategic partners?
I think focus and impact are key differentiators. Teams that tend to operate more as service providers, as we mentioned earlier, a bit more reactive. They focus on executing requests or producing outputs. You know, how many appeals, how many emails, and that's necessary. But you also need to balance the strategic thinking with that work as well. So they also tend to be a little bit more siloed. So a partner comes to them when they need the thing that they're requesting, as opposed to sitting down at the table together and shaping what is it you're trying to accomplish, and what we might then produce to support that could look different than what you otherwise would have come to us and asked for. So I think the more strategic partners operate with that higher level of collaboration, and they can actually shape priorities and shape the initiatives that they're executing, because they are able to demonstrate what those outputs are and the value associated with those when they do it in that more strategic fashion.
I can assume that if you have a siloed environment, that the person that works in that siloed environment, that is that service provider, when they get the order, they'll focus on that and only that and not go above and beyond and have like sort of a disconnect. But if you're the strategic partner and you within the entire ecosystem, you feel like you have a certain buy-in there and you want to go above and beyond to make sure that area that we're wanting to achieve is going to be achieved. Let's talk about some of the transformations that take place when it comes to making that switch, because what got us here won't get us there in the future. And sometimes there's got to be a buy-in from leadership. So do you suggest that advancement professionals need to be in C-level positions to make that change happen? Or what do you think makes that change happen?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I came into Drexel back in early 2017 as I would call a mid-senior level position as executive director. The impetus for that was our leadership team doing an assessment on the heels of the prior comprehensive campaign that was concluded, and really understanding that there could be greater value out of a marketing communication function if it were centralized. So they took team members that were residing in different advancement groups like advancement IT. There were some marketing staff embedded in alumni relations, annual giving. And so they assembled them into that centralized function, created the executive director role, and we're looking for somebody that could come in and help be a change agent and have the support of the senior leadership team within institutional advancement to do what was necessary to get that to be higher performing. And there's all kinds of, I think, transformational triggers that can prompt that. In our case, it was doing that organizational work coming out of a campaign, knowing that in a couple of years, or in my case, a couple of months, you'd be entering the public launch of another. So that's one. Financial constraints, of course, are another in higher education. When you've got budget deficits that need to be resolved, you're cutting expenditures, you're trying to figure out new and creative ways to drive incremental revenue. And so that can prompt a lot of organizational structuring too. And then you've got, you know, your crises of the week or the month or the year, and those can reveal gaps and opportunities or the need to change the way that teams are structured and what those roles look like and what they do. And you know, and now technology, right? We've got AI on the cusp of really breaking in and changing higher education in dramatic ways. It starting to happen a little bit in advancement, but I'd say we're kind of in the top of the first inning of that. There are a couple of companies putting really interesting products and services out there, and some institutions that are on the forefront of partnering with them to see what's possible. But higher ed is such a dynamic environment now, and it's only going to continue to be that way as more strategic impacts. It could be a presidential transition or other senior leadership transition. There's just the frequency and pace of these strategic shifts seem to be ever increasing, and you know that opens up, I think, a lot of questions, an opportunity to look at things differently and say, how could we do this work smarter, better, more efficiently, more effectively?
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because you mentioned the financial constraints and the budget cuts. With that come layoffs as well. Now all of a sudden you have institutions that struggle with increased workloads without the proper resources. You know, what are some of the strategies that you've seen work well for teams facing those challenges? You mentioned AI. Would you bring in AI to help with those drafts, for example?
Yeah, easy, short answer to that is yes. If you're not looking at how to do that, you will be soon enough. But the lack of resources in higher education, and I would say in advancement teams, you know, is such a common challenge. There are several strategies that I think divisions and sub-teams can look at, which is, of course, streamlining workflows. So one of the things that I helped our team do early on in my tenure at Drexel was evaluate different project management softwares. They had been using the basic model of Basecamp, and we evaluated a handful and ended up moving to one that had much more robust capabilities in terms of intake and managing volume and communication with partners, approvals, all of the things, right? So streamlining workflows is one. AI can be or will be a huge opportunity in that. I think a lot of folks in advancement marketing and communications are likely already using that prior to having some kind of university sanctioned or division sanctioned policy, because the opportunity is too great. You've experienced the benefits, and once you do, there's really no way going back. Like, who wants to do some of the long form ways of whether it's generating initial drafts of content, stories? That's a tough one to sell to somebody. Is no, don't do it that way anymore. Now that you've experienced the power of AI. Leveraging internal talent is another. You know, Drexel's model is pretty unique because of their co-op program. It's, you know, I would say, perhaps the oldest or maybe second oldest. It's over 100 years in the country, along with Northeastern. You know, it's among the best in higher education. And so within the university, you have different divisions and teams hiring co-op students for 6 months to come in and provide valuable offering. So it's not just, hey, we need, you know, an intern, go make some copies and do things like that. But our team looked at where are we missing valuable skill sets, whether it's around video shooting and production and editing work, or social media day-to-day execution and platform management, an additional graphic designer. And we bolted people in. And at one point, I think we had upwards of maybe 4 students, some combination of co-ops as well as student workers. So that's one way to expand your bench without having to look at the high cost of FTEs and overhead benefits that go along with that. And then I would say just really, really prioritizing being strategic. So not all requests are created equal. To your comment several minutes ago, if you just tackle the thing that gets asked of you that day, you're never going to create the space to think more critically with partners and figure out, you know, we could do that, but if we chose to make these set of decisions over here, with the finite resources that we have, we'll actually be able to create a greater impact. So yeah, I would say really looking at how can you streamline and make workflows more efficient? How can you leverage the talent you already have? And I talked about co-ops and students, right? But you can upskill your existing staff, have them looking at technologies. You know, how could we be getting more out of the technologies that we already have and we're investing in? Before you maybe start to layer in AI more robustly, but again, right, how might that person's role on your team change because of the introduction of AI tools that can free up capacity for them to perhaps focus on higher value work, and then again, really prioritizing solid decision-making of where you use your resources that you have.
Yeah, you mentioned the co-ops and the students' involvement. At higher education, you have such a goldmine of talent. It's raw talent, but it is talent. And it is also a good way to give those students the necessary experience while they're still in school to get them prepared for the workforce and what is expected of them outside of the classroom. So invaluable experience that they gather through that. And some of them stick around. I've seen that too. You know, the student workers become full-time employees down the line, and they're more bought in than anybody you bring in sometimes that you bring in from the outside, because they believe in the overall mission and the vision of the university because they were brought up in it. Part of your job, besides advancement, we mentioned it was stewardship as well. Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, how can MarCom leaders effectively steward the resources that they received and use data and analytics to demonstrate their strategic value to institutional leadership to make sure, you know, we got these funds and we're using them for the betterment of the university?
You know, I think the era of going off of your gut is long gone. You know, there's a time and a place for that, and that's built on years of experience and observation, right? But you really need to have a strong data operation in your marketing, communication, and stewardship groups. So, and of course, tracking on metrics like event attendance, you're standing up alumni programming or donor events. Email. I don't know if you're familiar with the CASE model, a definition of engagement, but over the last few years, communications has emerged as a fourth category of engagement metrics. So how are you, driving against communication as a form of engagement and capturing, whether that's on social media or email or other places, and really helping show how constituents' contributions are affecting the positive trajectory of the institution, alumni participation, fundraising. Mm-hmm. Analyzing the data and the trends can help refine strategies for stronger results. So sort of that virtuous cycle of, having your team become more comfortable with data, and then being able to assess and understand what you're looking at and apply that to make the work continually stronger and more effective. Benchmarking against peers is another form. So higher education, does a lot of benchmarking for that. Referencing my Drexel experience, the alumni relations team there is a member of an organization called PQUAD, which is comprised of, I think, a couple dozen institutions, and they all kind of share information around their alumni relations programs and insights. And so that's one way to assess, my peer set of schools over here are doing things a certain way, and this is what they're seeing out of that. How can I glean insights and apply it to our work over here? They stood up a virtual book club for their alumni, and this is what that did for them. Maybe we should explore that. So that's a great source of information and insight. I think the last one there, the opportunity for both marketing communications and donor engagement and stewardship is the forecasting ability. There are a lot of platforms right now that help with doing modeling, looking at alumni records and outputting reports to suggest, this is what these people might be inclined to do or give if they're engaged in a certain manner. And I think that's an area where I'm really interested to see what AI can do as well. Of course, you've got a lot of data privacy and sensitivity questions that you need to figure out there, and that's where institutions need to do a better job of on a fast track setting those guidelines in place. But the power of AI to help, whether you're an advancement MarCom team or an annual giving team or a principal giving team, it's across the board such a transformational opportunity to do that kind of higher strategic work that really groups, I think, haven't fully scratched the surface of yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You outlined a couple of things that really move the needle in the right direction. What are some of the common mistakes that you have witnessed or observed MarCom's teams make when they're trying to position themselves as strategic partners in an institution?
Yeah, I think one would be a lack of clarity around the goals, understanding what those are, and that might not necessarily be something entirely in their control. Of course, they can be curious and wanting to know that information. Sometimes that information just isn't available because it's in progress being shaped or what have you. But I think when teams don't have a clear understanding of how to align their work with either divisional or institutional strategies, that's where they tend to focus more on the outputs and act a little bit more like a service provider. And then you've got partners treating them as a service provider. So I think you're really insisting that you're in the know of what the goals are and the strategies, and that you have a seat where you can at the appropriate tables to be involved in those kinds of conversations and strategic planning meetings can really help create more of an opportunity for that team to be a strategic partner and to shape the work that they do in collaboration with whether it's their engagement peers or major and principal giving or essential university marketing communication or other school and college specific communicators. There are a lot of teams that a higher impact advancement marketing and communication group partner with, and it's not all just advancement focused.
And, you know, one of the things is that when you work with upper level leadership, not being afraid to ask the questions and look like you know, sometimes we're trying to put on a front, trying to look like the experts all the time. But if there's a new strategic directions that we are not familiar with, instead of pretending that we, know what's going on, really ask the question, how am I supposed to do that? And then open a conversation there and not being afraid, like Simon Sinek talks about being the idiot in the room, to open that conversation up a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. I'd say both based on my agency experience, I spent 12 or just about probably 13 years on the agency side before coming to Drexel. And I would say that the best partners I had when I was at agencies, but also that I had working in-house, have been the most humble. That they're not afraid to say, I don't have the answer to that. I want to know the answer to that. I'll work with you to figure out the answer to that, but I don't have it right now, right? So I think being transparent and humble and prioritizing collaboration is key to developing those kind of productive partnerships across an institution. And institutions are all shapes and sizes, right? Some are small, some are a little bit bigger, and then some like Drexel are really large enterprises, and you've got over a dozen schools and colleges, museums, hospitals. It can be really extensive, and we can't be experts of everything, but we can work hard to be good partners and do the best that we can to understand how to support them when we're called to do that work.
Yeah, you mentioned humility, and humility, for somebody to become, to show the humility, they have to have a certain amount of trust for the person that they're working with and not feel like they're being thrown under the bus if they don't know a certain thing. Now, how do you build that cross-campus relationship and collaboration from moving from a reactive service provider to a proactive partner? Over time, what advice would you give MarCom leaders about breaking down silos and fostering meaningful relationships amongst teams?
There are a lot of different ways. Speaking from my experience, when I joined Drexel, right off the bat, I needed to start to help the organization get to work on developing a communication strategy for a comprehensive campaign that was going to launch about 6-7 months later in the fall. So I think coming in with the background that I had in working in those kind of high profile strategic initiatives with institutions as a partner gave me a lot of credibility to do the outreach I needed to do when I came to Drexel and set up those meetings and forge relationships. So I would say, you know, do it early. It's absolutely worth the time investment to be building relationships. It will just pay dividends, multiple dividends over the time that you're at an institution. Ask for help, you know, as you get an understanding of what the opportunities are. Not all the solutions might reside within your purview or your advancement division's purview, and you have to have some campus partners in creating the change that you think is needed. Sharing information proactively, so you know, championing your work is one way as well. It builds credibility. It's a demonstration that your team is capable of what you say you are, and that will want to, I think, just organically have people interested in inviting you into more conversations. And we know higher education loves committees and task forces, right? And if you know, the double-edged sword there is if you're a strategic a partner and folks know that, you get invited to a lot of those different kinds of opportunities. And so they give great exposure to what else is happening across the institution. And that's a way to, again, add value to relationships where it might not immediately be to the specific benefit of something in advancement you're trying to do, but it supports the entire organization. And, you know, somewhere down the road, when you need a favor, you know you can call up on them and they're going to lend a hand and help you out. So it's reciprocal, right? So I would say always, you know, share information and try to be maybe creating and giving and offering up more value than you're taking, because at some point you're going to need it, and you know, you don't want there to be any challenges when you do.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to deposit into an emotional bank account for the time you need to pull something out there. And want to go in there respectfully too, you know, when you meet with a new team, because there was probably a reason why they're doing it a certain way. And if we need to realign, you know, be gentle and kind when you bring in these new approaches, so people don't put their guards up from the start. We talked about AI a little bit earlier. As you look at current trends in higher education, more people talk about AI. Some people are afraid that they're losing their job to AI. What are some of the skills that you think Marcom teams should be developing now to remain strategically valuable to an institution?
Sure. On the topic of AI, and I don't mean this to scare anybody who's listening or watching this, but if you're not already trying to figure out how your role needs to evolve to integrate AI, somebody else soon enough is going to do that for you, and it might not be to your benefit, right? So set aside the time, invest in learning what tools are out there. Start trialing, play around with them. It can be overwhelming. I totally get that. But pick one, right? You know, whether it's ChatGPT or Perplexity or some other tool that is easy entry. Spend 15 minutes, 20 minutes a day just getting a feel for it. Maybe watch a few quick videos on YouTube or TikToks, right? And just start to build that knowledge library of how you can use this in your job, and then start to apply it. And once you start to do that, I think it will just naturally pick up more momentum, and you'll realize, oh, well, I'm using this for these two things. I could probably also start using it for these handful over here. And before you know it, you're using these tools every day throughout the day, and it becomes kind of second nature in a way. And a lot of them have different levels of features, right? You can, you know, get the free version, which is a great place to start. But then once you get more comfortable and start to figure out where the limitations are of using that tool in the way that you want to use it, it might be worth paying the 10, 15, 20 bucks a month to unlock those additional enhancements to be able to do your work more strategically, right? So again, I would say everybody in higher education, marketing education should be trialing and testing different tools. You got to start somewhere. And if you're not, you will probably in early 2025. And you don't want to be the person who has the boss figure out, well, with this combination of tools over here, I can just, you know, if there's financial constraints, I could eliminate that role. We could have team members adopt these tools and, you know, we'll probably actually be in a better place. So have to be thinking proactively about your role, how you add value and how you can leverage technology, both again, the platforms your team's already using, but as well as new and emerging ones to create more impact.
Yeah, it does become second nature, like you mentioned. Perplexity, for example, I use that for research now. Instead of going to Google, I go to Perplexity and put in a topic and I ask it to give me some sources on that particular topic, and it serves up the best performing articles that I need or research papers. And if you have more questions about AI, you want to dive into it, you can always go to Enrollify Network, AI for You with Brian Piper. He has a great show on AI in higher education, so I highly recommend that that podcast as well.
If I could mention quickly that I'm partnering with Enrollify actually to do a 5-episode miniseries. It will release in late February and through March that focuses on AI for IA. So what are the tools out there that advancement teams are using or need to be considering using, and what are the possibilities there? So they produce some really great content on AI. And again, it's all educational opportunity for people to figure out how do you elevate your craft.
Absolutely. We'll be sure to tag that in the show notes once it comes out. Now, as we land that plane and close the episode, Dan, for Marcom leaders looking to transform their teams from service provider to strategic partner, what are some actionable steps that you would recommend for them to take first?
Clarify priorities. So if your team doesn't have a really clear picture of what you need to be focused on and why for your advancement division, or it could be your engagement group within advancement or the institution, the university at large, you need to get really clear on that. That will help ensure that your team's focused on the work that actually matters. And it gives you that opportunity to have a conversation with partners who might be asking for support with things that don't fit into that picture. And that doesn't mean that you need to say no, or, you know, maybe not now, we could do that later, or here's an alternative solution, right? Maybe you have a stable of external freelancers that you can introduce colleagues to do certain kind of work, because you know that your resources, as backed by your leadership team, need to be focused on this set of strategic priorities. So get really, really clear on that. If you're at the kind of, you know, the level that I entered Drexel at as an executive director, or maybe you're an AVP, or it could be, if you've got supervisory and management level responsibility for an advancement marketing communication or advancement communication, right? Sometimes they're separate. Marketing lives somewhere in advancement. Communication lives somewhere else. Sometimes they live in central university marketing communication. There are a lot of different models that are out there, but really assess and try to optimize your team. So, you know, what roles are your team members in? What are the responsibilities? Where are the gaps? How do you solve for them, whether it is upskilling or if you have the opportunity to hire new FTEs, which is becoming more and more challenging, and how do you make those business cases or bringing in outside expertise that can help you do that work, as I just mentioned. So a well-optimized team is better positioned to operate strategically than, you know, one that isn't and may end up performing more responsibilities along the line of the service provider. Investing in relationships, so building that trust across departments and across the institution, as I mentioned, showing the value that your team can bring to the table, and that collaboration, if Advancement Marcom lives in advancement, that collaboration with the central university marketing communication team is so critical. A lot of times you share work, responsibility. Maybe it's around your institution's magazine that gets produced a few times a year. And they might have the budget and some positions, and then you might have some roles that contribute content or dollars to that. And so there's a lot of interesting collaborations out there. So really focusing on the relationship with those who are stewarding the brand, and here you are a team perhaps stewarding a comprehensive campaign, there's going to be a great need for collaboration and integration. And then I would say as sort of a bonus fourth item there, just measuring and communicating the impact. So you've maybe made the case that your team is capable of higher performing or more strategic work. You're taking measures to optimize that team. You're building those relationships across campus. Share the impact of that, right? How is that changing the way that your group is driving results? It'll help validate that this is the better approach for the organization. It demonstrates why continued investment in a strategic advancement marketing communication function is worth it, right? So I'd say, you know, those are kind of four keys to really thinking about and acting on a plan for becoming a more strategic partner.
Perfect. Dan, how can people get in touch with you if they want to learn more about you or partner with you?
Appreciate that question. I'm very active on LinkedIn. I post several times a week there, different kinds of insights and ideas. So hopefully you can link to that in the show notes, and I would encourage people to check me out there. I'd love to hear from people directly. So if you've got an advancement marketing communication question or challenge and you're looking for somebody to, you know, somebody's brain you can pick, reach out to me through LinkedIn, and I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Thank you so much, Dan. I really appreciate your time today joining the episode, and I know the audience will get a lot out of it. Take care, my friend.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scribasound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help you. Follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.